want to tune into Witness Radio, go to Play Store on your phone, type Witness Radio. You will see the application, download it, and start listening to Witness Radio. You can also visit our website on www.witnessradio.org. Click live on your PC's right hand, then click the button in the middle. Then listen to Witness Radio and learn all issues about land and environmental protection.
Witness Radio.
Witness Radio.
Witness Radio.
Witness Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us as the sun rises. You're listening to The Dawn, right here on Witness Radio.
Good morning, Uganda. Good morning, Africa. Thank you for staying tuned to Witness Radio. This is The Dawn, and we are always here to kickstart your day every Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 a.m. East African time. Kindly follow us on all our social media platforms like X, formerly Twitter, at Witness Radio, on Instagram at Witness Radio, and Facebook at Witness Radio Uganda. You can tune in live on our website at www.witnessradio.org, and in case you'd like to chat with us, please do so through our WhatsApp, which is +256 745 965 765, or you can call us directly on +256 414 697 221. Coming up is Victim by Lucky Dube, and when we come back, we shall be looking at an incident where a Koleni land expropriation case tests constitutional and property rights of the people living in South Africa. My name is Eunice. Good morning.
She said, "Boy, oh."
This is Witness Radio, connecting indigenous and local community voices across the globe.
You're listening to The Dawn at Witness Radio.
Welcome back from that brief commercial break. You are still tuned in to Witness Radio, connecting local and indigenous communities across the globe. The Dawn is the program you are listening to, where we delve into the latest pressing issues that shape our communities and livelihoods. However, you can catch us live on our website at www.witnessradio.org or by simply visiting your Google Play Store and downloading the Witness Radio app. In today's program, we look at a colonial landmark expropriation case in South Africa that is testing constitutional and property rights for the people in South Africa. Now, a fierce legal and political battle is unfolding over the expropriation without compensation of a 34-hectare property in Driefontein, located in the city of Ekurhuleni, Gauteng. The case, centering on a piece of land estimated to be worth 30 million rands, is being closely watched as a potential test case for the future of land reform in South Africa. The case traces back to 2018, when the city of Ekurhuleni identified several properties, including portion 406 of the Driefontein farm, as part of a broader effort to explore expropriation without compensation. At the time, it was a politically contentious issue, with the African National Congress ANC pushing for constitutional amendments to make EWC more legally viable. Although the ANC's bid to amend Section 25 of the Constitution, which governs property rights, ultimately failed in Parliament, efforts at the municipal level continued. In 2019, the city moved to expropriate the Driefontein land without offering compensation, citing public interest and a constitutional obligation to provide housing for the poor. However, the city's justifications for doing so include vacant land for over 30 years. According to court documents, the city of Ekurhuleni rejected the owner's claim that the land was worth 30 million rands, urging instead that zero compensation was just and equitable. The municipality noted that the property had been vacant for over 30 years, it had no infrastructure or improvements, had no tenants or active leases, and had never been sold at market value. In the city's view, the property was being held purely for speculative purposes. They urged that expropriating it without compensation would allow them to build social housing in line with their constitutional duties and the requirements of the Housing Act. The city stated it had a housing backlog of over 427,802 units, with more than 43,000 poor residents living in municipal hostels and 123 informal settlements across its jurisdiction. The expropriation was carried out under the previous Expropriation Act, as the new expropriation bill, which outlines specific scenarios where the EWC may be permissible, had not yet become law. One of the justifications included in the newer bill is the expropriation of land held for speculative purposes, precisely the allegation made by the city in this case. However, because the new legislation is not yet in force, the court must interpret the matter under existing constitutional and statutory provisions. Section 25 of their constitution allows expropriation in the public interest, but mandates that compensation must be just and equitable, and that arbitrary deprivation of property is prohibited. The legal question at the heart of the case is whether zero compensation meets that constitutional standard. A business lobby group, Sekaliga, which has taken up the matter on behalf of the previous landowners, views the expropriation as a direct threat to the rule of law and property rights in South Africa. CEO Piet Lerox warned that the city is using the case to test the legal boundaries of EWC in hopes of setting a precedent for broader land seizures.
I think we should all work very hard to contribute to making sure that market value is the compensation that is provided to the owners. You know, the cheapest way to expropriate land is at market value. If you go below market value, that's the most expensive way, and then everybody in society pays a cost. It means everybody will be poorer, there'll be less development, and there'll be political, social, and economic crises waiting for us. So it's really important to restore market value compensation for that expropriation. That's in everybody's interest.
You seem to be following this case very closely. For viewers who may not be aware of the merits, what can you tell us at this stage? What is at issue here between the municipality mentioned here and indeed the landowner?
In 2018, the landowner was busy trying to develop the property. It was applying for development right, township establishment. Initially, they got it, but then it was appealed from the community. And during that appeal process, toward the end of 2018, the Ekurhuleni City Council resolved to expropriate this property at zero compensation, explicitly saying that they want a test case. In the course of 2019, this expropriation happened. The company, the owner, said, well, we won't contest the expropriation. If you need it, as you say, then that's fine. But the city then just refused to make an offer. And then after some court processes in the course of 2020, the former owner forced the city to make an offer. That offer was then for zero compensation. And the city said that it's zero because it's for social housing, and because social housing is in the public interest, and because the city does not want to pay, therefore the compensation should be zero. And the intervening period has been a back and forth. The company is trying to keep this out of the news, just settle this amicably, but now there's no way around it. It's heading to mediation next month and then to an 18-day trial in February next year in the High Court.
Yeah. What would fair compensation look like for Sekaliga? You're not an interested party. I guess I'm just trying to get your understanding of it. The figures I've mentioned here, value of 30 and 64 million rand is what this farm is estimated to be. What would fair compensation look like?
It would be for the court to determine something around market value. You have to start somewhere, and you start at market value. The city of Ekurhuleni started at zero. The company said, we have estimations of market value and we'll have a discussion around that. But the city just says zero. So it's a political motivated decision. From Sekaliga's perspective, it is crucial to maintain market value as the basis when the state decides to expropriate. Like I said, that is the cheapest form of expropriation. Anything significantly below market value is very expensive, because all property of the same type around the country will decrease in value. The owners of that property, whether it's pension funds or real estate investment trusts or individual owners, they will all share in the decrease in value, and that will have international ramifications. So really, it's in everybody's interest to pay market value. Whatever that is, that can be a cool and calm discussion. But to have that discussion, the city first needs to be willing to do so, and currently it isn't.
Yeah. there was a conversation at some point about use it or lose it. Do we know at this stage whether this land was being used productively?
Firstly, land, it's impossible to develop all land in the country at the same time. Land that doesn't have buildings on it, like nature reserves, or land that is being timed for later development, these are all very prudent, possibly very prudent investment decisions. So we must be very careful to try and force people to do something with the land that could lead either to natural destruction or it could lead to malinvestments and so on. In this case, none of that even applies because the development property was in the process of being developed. And we must recall that the city said it wanted to use this for urgent social housing. It's 7 years later. I was at that property last week. Nothing has been built on the property. If it was up to the owner, something may very well have been built. They were planning to put housing developments on that site. And also, it's not an easy site to develop. There are sinkholes on the one side. There's a mine dump on the other. There's a wetland. It would be very costly to develop, but the owners were in the process of putting that development together, and the city has done nothing. So, in fact, the intervention of expropriation, especially the intervention of expropriation without compensation, has caused a decrease in housing compared to what it would have been if the city had just stayed out of the business.
Yeah. As you say, as a final question to you, you say this is the seventh year. Basically, this case, this dispute has dragged on for 6 years. Mediation now, we hear, is scheduled for October this year. And then there will be an 18-day trial set for February 2026. That's a report from Business Day. How quickly should matters such as this be resolved?
It's actually unacceptable to have a seven-year delay. I mean, these are millions of rand of wasted legal expenses, opportunity cost, management time, etc. So I think this is one of the reasons why the 2024 Act that was assented to by President Ramaphosa, the new Expropriation Act, is so unacceptable. Because even though this happened under the old Act with much stronger protections, this could drag on for 7 years. Under the new Act, the dragging out will be much longer, the expenses will be much more. So I think it's unacceptable to waste people's time and money like this. And unfortunately, this is one of the reasons why, even though Saqaliqa will not be involved in this case, this is a private matter that the owner is pursuing for recourse, for compensation, we will be involved in our own application during the course of October against the 2024 Expropriation Act, because if that act is allowed to stand, we will see many more examples of this with a lot of value destruction.
Witness Radio.
Witness Radio.
Witness Radio.
Witness Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us as the sun rises. You're listening to The Dawn, right here on Witness Radio.
The group further urges that such expropriations would devalue similar properties, causing economic ripple effects that extend to local and international investors, financial markets, and property developers. According to Saqaliqa, uncertainty over property rights could damage investor confidence, harm development, and discourage private sector involvement in land reform initiatives. The case has also drawn foreign attention, particularly from countries like the United States, which have previously expressed concern over South Africa's EWC trajectory, Saqaliqa confirmed.
Do you have any information in regards to land grabbing, or you're aware of a person who has been evicted and their property destroyed because of land disputes? Report to Witness Radio through our numbers 0414-697-221 or WhatsApp 0745-965-765, or you can report directly to our website on www.witnessradio.org. Just click on the map, follow the direction, click on the map indicating the individuals and the land being grabbed. Click on that word, report evictions. Then report any victim of land evictions. Thereafter, search for your area of residence on that map. Click your area of residence, then a red dot will indicate. Click the red dot and fill in the form, then save your input. Don't forget to attach the picture of the grabbed land in question, then upload to send.
Breaking the silence and elevating community voices.
Witness Radio, thank you so much. You have become our voices. Nobody would know what is taking place because for a long time we had not known what was going on in Kiryandongo, what had taken place in Mubende, because the grabbers operate at night when people are asleep. But you have done a lot.
Witness Radio.
Witness Radio.
Witness Radio.
Witness Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us as the sun rises. You're listening to The Dawn, right here on Witness Radio.
Welcome back from that brief commercial break. You are still tuned in to Witness Radio, connecting local and indigenous communities across the globe. The Dawn is the program you're listening to, where we delve into the latest pressing issues that shape our communities and livelihoods. And while moving on, in Uganda, the National Environment Management Authority, NEMA, and its board has concluded its environmental oversight mission ahead of first oil production in Uganda. Uganda's journey towards becoming an oil-producing nation reached a significant milestone in September 2025 as the ninth board of directors of the National Environment Management Authority, NEMA, concluded a comprehensive four-day environmental monitoring mission across the Albertine, Graben, and Luwero regions. The mission, which marked the board's first major field activity since its inauguration in March, aimed to assess compliance with environmental regulations, verify the implementation of environmental and social impact assessment conditions, and engage directly with stakeholders involved in Uganda's most strategic industrial and infrastructure projects. The delegation's lead took them through five districts, Masindi, Bulisa, Hoima, Chikube, and Luwero, each representing a critical node in the network of developments tied to Uganda's oil and gas ambitions. The mission focused not only on the oil fields but also on associated infrastructure projects, large-scale industrial developments, and urban centers facing growing environmental pressures. This expansive approach demonstrated the board's intent to integrate environmental accountability into all dimensions of Uganda's development strategy. The tour began with visits to the Kingfisher Development Area and the Tilenga oil fields, where the two flagship petroleum projects in the country. The sensitive ecological context of the Kingfisher site, situated near water bodies and biodiversity hotspots, was a focal point of the board's inspection. CINOC assured the visiting officials that it had put in place adequate systems to monitor and mitigate ecological impact, including water quality protection and emergency containment procedures. These reassurances were critical given the long-standing concerns raised by environmental activists and communities about the potential for irreversible environmental harm from oil exploration and production. At the Tilenga project, Total Energies hosted the board at multiple operation sites, including well pads, water abstraction points, and waste management facilities. The board scrutinized the handling of industrial waste and the systems in place to manage water resources sustainably, noting both achievements and areas requiring improvement. These site visits underscored the increasing importance of environmental governance in Uganda's petroleum sector, especially as the country prepares to produce its first barrel of oil. Beyond the oil fields, the board extended its oversight to infrastructure supporting the petroleum industry. At Kabalega Industrial Park, officials from the Uganda National Oil Company, UNOC, reported that key infrastructure components such as wastewater treatment facilities, power reticulation systems, and perimeter fencing were 98% complete. The park, which is poised to become the country's largest industrial zone of its kind, is already onboarding investors. Its development reflects Uganda's strategy to maximize the value chain of oil through local industrialization, but it also raises concerns over pollution control, resource consumption, and long-term ecological sustainability. The tour continued to Kabalega International Airport, a logistics hub under construction to support oil-related transport needs. This development was received with optimism by the board, though environmental risks related to increased air traffic, noise, and land use changes remain part of NEMA's future monitoring agenda. In a show of commitment to climate mitigation and ecosystem restoration, board members concluded the inspection with a tree planting exercise designed to offset future carbon emissions. The symbolic act also served as a prelude to broader initiatives aimed at tapping into carbon credit programs, which could offer Uganda both financial and environmental benefits if properly managed. The board's oversight also extended to the private sector, particularly the agriculture and manufacturing industries. Visits to Victoria Sugar Limited and Kinyara Sugar Limited provided insight into the sugar sector's efforts to integrate environmental compliance into their operations. At Kinyara, the board inspected the distillery, sugar refinery, biofertilizer plant, and effluent treatment systems. They commended the company's investment in biopesticides and biofertilizers as alternatives to inorganic chemicals, recognizing this as a significant step towards sustainable agriculture. Victoria Sugar Limited also received praise for implementing pollution prevention measures, though the board urged the company to accelerate the completion of outstanding environmental safeguards. Both companies were reminded of the importance of aligning their operations with circular economy principles, where waste is minimized and resources are reused to the greatest extent possible. As the mission progressed into urban territories, more complex environmental challenges came to light. In Bulisa District, local leaders voiced concern over recurring flash floods and human settlements encroaching on floodplains. The board responded by instructing local authorities to establish a dedicated flood emergency team and intensify public sensitization efforts. These measures, they urged, are essential in mitigating the growing risks associated with climate change and unregulated land use. In Hoima City, environmental degradation linked to rapid urbanization was a key theme. The board was briefed on three primary concerns: wetland degradation, the near saturation of the Chibati landfill, and increased noise pollution in residential areas, especially around the newly constructed Kabalega Stadium.
No transporter of waste should pick waste from a household or from a shop when they are not licensed. So they should be controlled. It's a stream of revenue, but also harmonization of operations. And then two, once we've licensed waste transporters, they should charge the generators of waste at household level, at the commercial buildings level. People must pay for their waste to be collected. And once you have licensed transporters, people must be forced to only pay to the licensed transporters to pick their waste, so that waste is not managed by everybody. That's part of the problem. When you leave waste to be managed by everybody, people will dump it in the trenches at night, People will not be dwindling at night, and you will have a total mess. So we shouldn't go back into dumping site. We should work together to design a proper waste management facility. It may not be so advanced as to energy recovery for now. That's futuristic, but at least composting and recovery waste can be achieved within the means we have. And then we shall have a complete loop from the household to transporter to the bulk waste reception and management. We know the capacity is still low, but our people should be supporting you now as we develop your capacity. Our plan is to ensure that at least every city environment office has a noise meter given by NEMA, which we shall support you with those tools. A noise meter, a GPS, you know, basic tools for day-to-day environment work. That one we shall give you.
To make sure that we remain strong. Even when we want to vote, we can only read the people who arrive. If they are dead, then obviously have nobody to read. So I want to request those of us who are politicians to remember that the environment is there to protect us, and we also need to protect it.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us as the sun rises. You're listening to The Dawn, right here on Witness Radio.
The four-day monitoring mission concluded with a strong commitment from the NEMA board to enforce stricter compliance going forward. The board announced its intention to conduct quarterly inspections of all high-impact projects, especially in the Albertine, Graben, and other environmentally sensitive regions. This pledge represents a shift from reactive to proactive environmental governance, signaling the agency's intent to play a central role in Uganda's development trajectory.
Breaking the silence and elevating community voices.
The Witness Radio, mpuliranga njenyu mirizamu wadenga tulimunaku eyo kugobebwa. Ne Witness Radio, etuguzebuze, etuigiriza, emisomo, twebazanyabe Witness Radio, okuja kukula undi, okulaba antinafe radio, etuse mchitundu chafe.
Witness Radio!
Witness Radio!
Witness Radio!
Witness Radio!
I'm sure you've heard the news, but have you heard the voices behind the headlines? It's time to meet the people shaping our world. Every weekday morning, from Uganda and beyond, we bring you news that matters, insights you won't find anywhere else, and inspiring stories of everyday heroes driving sustainable change. Whether it's communities fighting for justice, innovators building a brighter future, or unsung champions making a real difference, The Dawn at Witness Radio is your daily destination for hope, action, and truth. Tune in Monday to Friday from 5 to 6 a.m. East African time and get ready to own the day with your daily dose of community spotlights and analysis that goes deeper. Don't just listen to the news, be part of it. Tune in now and join a movement for positive change. The Dawn at Witness Radio, your morning just got a whole lot brighter.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us as the sun rises. You're listening to The Dawn, right here on Witness Radio.
You have been a very good listener from where we started to now that we've come to the end of our show, The Dawn, only here at Witness Radio. However, we are here every weekday from 5 to 6 a.m. East African time. You can listen to us online at www.witnessradio.org or by visiting the Google Play Store and downloading the Witness Radio app. For any comments and interactions, do not hesitate to reach out to us on our WhatsApp, which is +256 745 965 765, or by directly calling us on +256 414 697 221. My name is Eunice. Have a blessed day.
Thank you for listening to The Dawn at Witness Radio. Catch us live every Monday to Friday, 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. Don't miss. See you next time.